Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Of all the difficult tasks one has to perform in the course of an average day, being present seems like the easiest and maybe even the least important. After all, how often do we hear that just showing up isn't good enough? Well, maybe it is. Joining us by phone today to talk about his new book, Availability, The Challenge and the Gift of Being Present, is noted Catholic author and professor emeritus at Loyola University, Maryland, Dr. Robert Wicks. Dr. Wicks, thanks for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
So let's get right into your book, which I think focuses on a really fascinating topic and one that not a lot of people probably give much thought to. So before I ask you about your idea to write the book on this topic, how about we begin with what you define as availability in your book?
Sure. I see availability as the freedom to be truly present, to be open to relationship with yourself, others, and God in the most elegant sense of the term.
And you mentioned in your book that the idea for this took root some 30 years ago. Is that right?
Yes, it was conceived and written at what I felt was an especially grace time in my life. I had gone up to Harvard to visit with Henry Nouwen, who was teaching there at the time, and we sat in his kitchen speaking about a book I was going to write on the gift of availability. And his response was that availability wasn't simply a gift, but also a major problem for many of us. And he felt that the scriptural theme of pruning was one I should use to demonstrate that undisciplined availability, it led to burnout. Whereas if we pruned our availability and ensured time for ourselves and God, our presence to others would bloom even more fully.
Mm-hmm. And this is obviously an issue that a lot of us face, especially, you know, young families, but professionals, all genders, really all ages, that we're so busy that there isn't time unless we make time.
That's right. That's right.
And availability is both complex and simple. How is that?
Well, availability is simple in the sense that all of us can open ourselves up to relationship. I mean, we know that. Yet it is also not easy and somewhat complex in the sense that the balance between presence to others, ourself, and God is often not there. Some of us are too available, as you mentioned, you know, often for reasons that are not thought out and corrected. Others unnecessarily pull back because of anxiety. So the whole issue of availability was indeed worth spending a book on, a little book anyway.
And you write that being present is an opportunity to be spiritual. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, spirituality is openness to the truth with a capital T. When we're present in the now rather than in the silver casket of nostalgia or off in the future in our minds doing all these great things, we have a real opportunity to touch the holy in our encounters with others, ourselves, and in prayer. James Joyce said of one of his characters, "Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body." And I think, unfortunately, we're like that. We're not at home spiritually and psychologically most of the time. And with availability, true availability, we can be present in ways that we don't miss the presence of God that is all around and within us. And maybe it's a smile on an older person's face as we help her up, the laughter of a little child and seeing snowfall, or seeing snow falling on snow, or experiencing a moment of clarity or awareness in ourselves that's freeing. I think it's all there for the taking if we're aware in a good way. But once again, it's not easy, and that's why I spent so much time on this little book, Availability, The Challenge and Gift of Being Present.
So on the practical side, are we talking about, you know, quiet time? Are we talking about, you know, calming our minds? Are there practical things that we can, you know, tell people, look, if you want to be present, here's how to do it?
Yeah. I think that first we have to see the seriousness of it. Availability to self, others, and God is the source of true joy and peace, if it's done in an appropriately reflective manner. Catholic author and physician Walker Percy wrote in one of his novels, "What if life is like a plane and we miss it?" Well, that's easy to do today. You know, if we care about and are available to everyone and every demand, though, paradoxically, we're running to our grave and ignoring, in a real way, our family, friends, and those we meet, even ourselves and certainly God. So, in terms of the practical, we need to seek to be aware of the crumbs of alone time. By alone time, I mean times in silence and solitude, and also times among people where we're reflective in ourselves. And I think if we look for these crumbs of alone time, we'll see that they're already in our lives. Mm. You know, someone once said that life is something that happens while we're busy doing something else. Well, having at least a few moments of quiet time in the morning and at points during the day with the Lord, you know, when we do that, it happens. So I suggest people don't add anything to your schedule. You got too much on. Take a few moments, you know, before you get out of bed or in the shower or on the drive or walk to work. Take those reflectively. Now, put yourself gently in the presence of God. During the day, when you're running to the bathroom, you're going to get a cup of coffee, you're walking during lunch, take those moments. Sent to yourself, maybe with a word like Jesus, a word like gentle, a word like compassion, to send to yourself, and it'll make a difference. Mm,
yeah, because I think people's instincts today are to, you know, we're riding to work, we're putting the radio on, we're running, we're working out, we've got our iPods on, and that isn't necessarily helping us achieve that place of center you're talking about.
No, and I think if you just took 20 minutes out of the whole day, not adding the 20 minutes, but using the time that's already there, that would be a beginning, and then it would create a hunger for more of that time.
I really like the story you tell in your book about the time that you were in Ireland and you got lost, and when you stopped to ask directions, you kind of had an interesting moment. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was interesting. I was so lost at the time near an area called the Burren. And when the first time I passed it, I thought, oh, this is lovely. The second time I said, oh, wow, you know, I'm glad I got a chance, even though I'm lost, to see it again. But when I circled it for the fourth time, I was pleased to see a farmer standing outside the gate to one of his pastures. And when I stopped, we wound up chatting not only about the directions to where I wanted to go, but also a number of other things as well. It was like he had known me all his life. And as I was driving away, I thought, you know, wasn't it nice that he took out the time from his day to converse with me? But then, after driving a bit further, I realized that what actually happened when I pulled the car over to chat with him was that he made me part of his life. That's true availability.
Yeah, amen. And when I read that, I couldn't help but wonder, what would the situation have been like here, you know, whether it's in Baltimore or New York or any other, you know, busy city? You know, you probably would have gotten a very different response and certainly a different reaction.
Yeah, and I don't think it has to be.
No, that's right. There's a section in your book where you talk about clarity and the role of what you call mission and vision. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Clarity helps us gain, maintain, and regain a healthy sense of perspective. Yet it doesn't occur in a vacuum, and that was my point. It's inextricably bound to both personal mission and vision. People underestimate mission. Mission provides the basis and driving force for clarity, whereas vision provides the horizon that guides us and it leads us on each day, each year. Charles Kingsley, I quoted in the book, notes, we act as though comfort and luxury were the chief requirements of life, when all we need to make us really happy is something to be enthusiastic about. So clarity and mission go hand in hand. Therefore, I think we need to ask ourselves what steps we need to take to become more of a critical thinker, a critical prayer, so we can catch ourselves when we're resisting clarity for some reason.
Topic that I really thought was interesting, or an insight rather, was you spoke about when you're present to another person, you're gaining access into their lives for good or for bad. And then you speak about how that process leads to greater self-knowledge. Can you talk about that?
Sure. One of the greatest gifts we can share with others is a sense of our own peace and a healthy perspective. And so when we're present to others, we need to ask ourselves what factors, maybe it's neediness, a desire to be seen in a certain positive way, fear of being misunderstood, a wish to be appreciated for what we do, great need for success, or extreme self-doubt or inordinate self-confidence is blocking us from having a more loving relationship, and how we might deal with such blocks in ourselves in a gentle, clear manner.
Dr. Robert Wicks, author of Availability, The Challenge and the Gift of Being Present. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. The only thing I would add to you is the message of this book is simple but important. It's love God deeply, do what you can for others, and please take good care of yourself. Thank you.
Dr. Wicks, thanks so much.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Every year, the Church celebrates the solemnity of the Immaculate Conception of the Blessed Virgin Mary, reflecting on Mary's special and ongoing role in bringing us the means of our salvation, which is her Son, Jesus Christ. The Holy Day fell on December the 8th and also marked the official start of the Holy Year of Mercy, a special jubilee declared by Pope Francis. The Pope has said that he wants the celebration to be a, quote, living experience of the closeness of the Father, whose tenderness is almost tangible. From now until the end of the Jubilee, November 20th of next year, certain churches in the Archdiocese will serve as Holy Door pilgrimage sites. By visiting one of these pilgrimage sites, receiving the Eucharist and the Sacrament of Penance, pilgrims may obtain a plenary indulgence. Holy Door sites in the Baltimore Archdiocese include the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Baltimore, the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen in Homeland, the Basilica of the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Emmitsburg, St. John the Evangelist in Frederick, St. Ignatius in Hickory, St. Mary in Annapolis, the Shrine of Saints Peter and Paul in Cumberland, and the Shrine of St. Anthony in Ellicott City. Don't miss out on a plenary indulgence, which the Church defines as, quote, the remission of the temporal punishment for sin, the guilt of which is already forgiven. We'll be producing stories with the Year of Mercy theme throughout the year. Visit CatholicReview.org and find the Holy Year of Mercy link under the button labeled News. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
You are invited to join WCBM at midnight Christmas Eve for a special presentation of the 10 p.m. Christmas Eve Mass from the Cathedral Mary Our Queen, 5200 North Charles Street. The celebrant is Archbishop William Laurie, Archbishop of Baltimore.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We are featuring a new segment this week featuring a retired priest from the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We begin this week with Monsignor Tom Tuis, who retired in 2000 after 37 years of ordination to the priesthood. Yet, like so many of our retired priests, he continues to celebrate Masses and to assist where needed. Monsignor Tuis, thanks for joining us by phone today.
Okay.
You were kind enough to accept my invitation to be the first retired priest featured on the show. Do you think of yourself as retired, given how active you remain?
No. Not really. A priest, I don't think, ever really retires from the priesthood. What he retires from is the administrative responsibilities that go with being a pastor, taking care of buildings and and grounds and
fundraising,
fundraising, and all those type of things. He does retire from those, but he never retires from the priesthood itself. In fact, with retirement, we have the opportunity of doing the main thing that we were ordained for, of celebrating the sacraments for God's people. So we never retire, I don't think.
Sure.
And I find my retirement years far more enjoyable then the years when I was a pastor and had all the administrative responsibilities, fundraising, and everything else that goes with being a pastor.
You must have asked yourself what took you so long.
Oh, it's great to be relaxed from that and to just sacraments. It's what we prepared for when we felt the call from the Lord to be a priest. And that's what we spent years in the seminary preparing for. And it's a joy now just to do that and not have all the other administrative responsibilities.
You served as pastor of what was then called All Saints Parish in
Northwest
Baltimore, St. Mary's in Govins, St. Michael's in Overly, and Our Lady of Hope in Dundalk. Are there things that you miss about the full-time ministry, obviously aside from the administrative stuff, which nobody misses, but there must be some things that being a pastor affords you to do?
Well, I miss the closeness that you have with the congregations for which you celebrate. As a pastor of a parish with constantly with the same congregation, you get to know the people better. There's a more closeness, a more feeling of affiliation with them than just going into a parish on a given Sunday and celebrating a Mass and maybe not going back there again until you're needed. But the closeness that you have with the community is what you miss, I think, when you're not doing full time as a parish pastor.
And you mentioned you're assisting at various parishes in the weekends. Do you have a schedule? Are you in the same places every month, or do you think where are you spending some of your Sundays?
I go to St. Michael's in Overly, where I was pastor at one time. I go back there and help on weekends now. And ever since I've been retired, I've been helping at weekends at St. Mark's in Falston. I also go to Oakcrest. I was there this morning. And then to Annunciation also on a weekday basis. And whenever other places, when someone calls and needs help.
And when you're not celebrating Masses or other sacraments for folks, or how are you spending your time that you aren't spending?
Well, more recently, I kind of limited it to what I could do because I had an open heart surgery a year ago that replaced a valve in my heart. The second time I'd had that done, had a bypass previously. So I'm not as active as I used to be physically right now. But if I were, I'd be playing golf at least once or twice a week.
You mentioned are you a native of Baltimore? Is that correct?
Oh yes, yeah. Born and raised in St. Dominic's Parish, out in Hamilton. We had close to 20 priests came out of that parish.
And you were ordained in '63. Who ordained you?
It was Archbishop Sheehan then. Before he became a cardinal, mm-hmm. It was Archbishop Sheehan. Yeah, I was ordained by him.
And what was it like being a newly ordained priest during Vatican II?
Well, it was exciting being a priest. Period. I anticipated it for many years, and when it actually came, it was exciting. It was challenging too, though, with Vatican II. Many people were having a difficult time with the changes in the church, and so you had to be conscious of that and help them to recognize the fact that the Vatican Council had changed things, that it was basically the same church, the same faith, the same doctrines, the same teachings, but the manner in which we learned them or the manner in which we celebrated them, it did change. And that was very difficult for some people. It was a certain amount of joy, I think, in helping them to recognize the changes in the church and to accept them and to embrace them. But for some people, it was very difficult. But for the most part, people were open to the change and to the Vatican Council and to its doctrines and its directives.
You had mentioned that one of the things that you miss about being a pastor, serving in a parish full time, is the relationships with the congregation. I imagine that there are some families that you still maintain a close relationship with. I remember seeing an article in the Catholic Review that talked about a family from Overly that you continue to see on a fairly regular basis.
I still see them quite frequently.
That's great. And is that something that you're able to do and maintain those contacts?
Oh, yeah. That's, again, one of the joys of the past, and so far as the friendships that you make, the contacts that you have. And there are probably a couple dozen people, you know, that I'm still very close friends with, that of a friendship or a relationship which developed through my being their pastor in the past. I still enjoy their friendship and enjoy going back and seeing them or having them come here to spend some time with me.
You see a number of retired priests who are in a similar situation where they are still helping out, celebrating masses publicly, but I imagine that there are also men who whose physical conditions won't allow them to do that. That must be a difficult situation for them.
Well, it is, you know, and I think that's something that maybe they could describe for you better than I could, because I'm still fortunately pretty active. But I'm living at Mercy Ridge now, and I think that's one of the advantages to the men here that have reached a point where they can't go out anymore and celebrate sacraments in parishes. We have a daily liturgy here every day at 8 o'clock in the morning. So even if they can't go out and celebrate Mass for a parish group, they can celebrate the Mass here with their fellow priests. I think it's a big advantage to being here at Mercy Ridge, that you have other priests that you can celebrate with in every morning.
And do you think that because you're still living in community as you did when you were serving in a parish, that that's a helpful part of the transition?
No, I guess I couldn't say that because for 14 years I lived on my own after I retired. Mm-hmm. I didn't come here right away. I just came here about 6 months ago. But I reached a point where I realized it was not beneficial to me, or it wasn't good for me to be living alone anymore. I lived in a condo in Perry Hall area. And I realized, that I was encouraged by my good friend at the time, Monsignor Art Valenzano. He told me, he said, I had always said to him, when I need to do something and I don't recognize it, you tell me. And so he had told me, he said, you shouldn't be living alone anymore. You should go be in a community situation where there are others there who can help you and take care of you. Mm-hmm. And so it was at his encouragement that I came here to Mercy Ridge.
The every January, the Archdiocese takes up a second collection that we call the Special Care Collection. It provides funds for the special care of retired priests, primarily medical expenses, things like that.
Yeah.
How gratifying is it to know that so many people really look forward to giving to this collection each year as they do for the retired religious collection?
I wouldn't exactly say it's gratifying. I'd say it's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting to know, that your service to the people of the Archdiocese was appreciated, and they show their appreciation by the fact that they're willing to contribute generously to that collection. It's especially helpful for priests who medically, need constant care and attention. I think it's exciting to know that the effect that you had, or the fact that people appreciate what you did for them, it's always great to know that you've been appreciated.
Oh, Monsignor Tuis, you're a beloved priest of the diocese, and we're so glad to hear you're doing so well, and that people still get to see you, whether it's in Overly or any of the number of places that you celebrate Masses on the weekends, and we're so grateful that you're willing to do that, even though you're not in full-time ministry anymore.
Well, but, that's the reason why I was ordained, to celebrate the Mass. I went to Calvert Hall at one time at a high school, and the Christian Brothers made their pitch, to get me to become a Christian Brother, and I said, I very much admire and respect the work that you do, but I really want to be able to celebrate the Eucharist. And so I would prefer to pursue the priesthood vocation.
And we're very glad you did, Monsignor Tuis. Yeah. Thanks for taking some time to be with us today.
Okay. Anytime. God bless you.
Thank you.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.